As Thanksgiving and the holidays arrive, while the year comes to a close, we're taking a look back at some of the most compelling conversations of 2023 on the Hidden Killers podcast.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Eric Bland is my guest. He is the attorney for the family of Gloria Satterfield in the case against Alec Murdaugh. He's the one who really brought Alec's misdeeds into the national spotlight to begin with. Before the murder charges even took place, he was there pointing a finger going, there's something not quite right here, and managed to get settlements for five different families who accused Murdaugh of stealing settlements, money that they received. Well, Murdaugh represented them. Now, obviously, there's the civil matter with the Satterfield case, but there's also the reopening of it into a criminal matter, taking a look at if there was foul play involved. I want to talk to you about that, because from what we know, with the reports of Gloria falling down the stairs, the two people who were in the home were Paul and Maggie. Is this something where there's an implication or a thought that maybe one of the two or both were involved in her actual death?
I don't think so, Tony. Certainly not Paul, because he loved her like a mother.
Yeah.
She helped raise him. You heard in the Netflix special, he carried a photograph of her in his wallet.
Yeah.
So I doubt that he would do that. As to Maggie, I don't really know the relationship that she had with Gloria, but I know it was close. They all went to her funeral. From my standpoint, I don't think she was killed. And the reason I say that is because if you're going to try to kill somebody, you're going to kill somebody. You're going to finish the job. You're not going to push her down the stairs only for her to come to a semi-conscious state and call an ambulance and then put her in an ambulance with the thought that she could go to the hospital and get treated, wake up and say, hell no. You know, the dogs didn't push me down the stairs. Human hands did.
Yeah.
So I think that when Alex came home and then talked with her, and that's how the story came around that, you know, it was the dogs that tripped her because he gave a statement to the insurance company. I just don't think that he would have let them take her to the hospital if either Paul or Maggie pushed her down the stairs. And, you know, we'll never know because Paul and Maggie are dead.
Sure.
And unless they told somebody before they died that they knew of the circumstances, certainly Alex isn't going to cop to that. You know, unless he gets a come to Jesus revelation in the jail cell and he wants to come clean on everything, I doubt he's going to ever squeal if he knew who actually killed him. There was a farmhand, but that person came 15 minutes later. So, you know, let's say they exhume her body, which our clients are not really itching to have done. You know, you can imagine that you wouldn't want your loved one's remains to be disturbed, especially when her husband is buried in her coffin with her, the remains. He was cremated. They're not itching to have her exhumed. But when they do, you know, the injuries are still going to be the same.
Yeah.
So if she's pushed down the stairs and, you know, her head clear, she clearly had closed head and open head injuries as noted on the autopsy report. And she had 12 broken ribs, but the cause of death wasn't natural. I mean, that's what they put on her death certificate. It's not natural to fall down the stairs, but if the dogs push you or human hands push you, you're going to have the same exact injury. So I'm not sure what they're going to find if they decide that they're ever going to exhume her body.
It makes you wonder, like, did this happen to be an actual legitimate death surrounding the Murdaughs, or it was just an accident? There wasn't anything else involved. And then Alex just decided to try and make it a payday after the fact and saw it as an opportunity.
We did. We believe that's exactly what happened. I mean, you know, he thinks in ways that you or I or normal people wouldn't think, you know.
Yeah.
He looks at every opportunity as how it's going to enrich myself because he's a narcissist and a psychopath. You and I immediately want to commiserate with the injured person. And the last thing we're thinking about is wow, how can I turn this into a lawsuit?
Yeah. And that's the first thing that's on his mind. I want to talk about the Stephen Smith case a little bit, because obviously with all the trial thing being done now, everybody's looking at, well, what else is there? And I always have been saying, this circus is far from being over. There is going to be so many more things that are going to come out. I think things that have never even come out yet, far beyond the boat crash, far beyond Gloria, far beyond Stephen Smith. This is a man who's lived this life for many years, and there's a lot to investigate there. But the Stephen Smith case was always very interesting. You being there, you being able to see how those things developed back at that point in time. Obviously, there hasn't been any charges that were brought against Buster or any member of the Murdaugh family, but it certainly looks ridiculously suspicious of the woman who, or of the man actually, who wasn't a hit and run. There's no evidence of it being a hit and run. It is clearly a body that was beaten and thrown out of a vehicle. But how is there this connection, and how strong is that connection to the Murdaughs that could possibly put Buster or Paul or either or in that vehicle at the time of his body being dropped in the road?
Well, I am advising in some capacity, not in full capacity, but in some capacity, depending on the issues, Sandy Smith. So I know her real well, Stephen's mother.
Yeah.
She has contended that Randy Murdaugh, the brother, showed up at the accident scene where Stephen was recovering in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
So that's one quizzical fact. Two, she got a phone call from Randy Murdaugh, who offered her his services to represent her. And she was like, well, why do I need representation? What would I need representation for?
Yeah.
And she never really got a good answer to that question. So the answer really is we don't have a firm connection between the Murdaughs and Stephen Smith's death. However, at or about the time they opened up the investigation for the death in Gloria Satterfield, Sled also announced, after searching the property after the murders following June of 2021, supposedly they found something that caused them to open an investigation in Stephen Smith's death. Now, since that time, we've heard nothing. And law enforcement doesn't give you a press conference and tell you, hey, this is where we are in our investigation. But usually there's enough journalists that have sources that we'll be able to get a leak or two that would say, hey, look, they're closing in on something, or they've eliminated these suspects. Sandy Smith had hired a very prominent defense attorney out of Charleston, a criminal defense attorney named Andy Savage. Uh-huh. And Andy and my partner and I had represented Michael Slager. And I don't know if you remember the Michael Slager case, but he was the police officer who shot Willie Scott in the back running. After they had a fight over a taser in Charleston.
Okay.
And we represented Michael Slager, the police officer, in connection with claims that he had over insurance coverage through the Police Benevolent Association. Mm-hmm. Andy Slager represented him on the criminal case.
Yeah.
So she hired Andy. Andy had some investigators do some serious investigation. And without talking to Sandy Smith, he released a public statement that said, the Murdaughs don't have anything to do with it. And Sled disagreed with that statement because they didn't close the investigation. And from what I understand, the Murdaughs may have information because obviously the connections to the 14th Judicial Office, where Randolph Murdaugh was a solicitor, the father, grandfather, and the great grandfather. But because of the relationship they had with the current solicitor, Duffy Stone. So the answer is, well, does Buster know anything? Does John Marvin know anything? Does Alex know anything? Or Randy know anything? The answer is probably yes. I don't know whether they have anything to do with it, but knowing how information flows through that family, I would think they would know something of what happened, to Stephen. According to Sandy, she was supposed to, Stephen was supposed to go away with a prominent person that weekend, and go on a vacation with a very prominent person. He wouldn't give the name to Sandy. So, you know, how do you fill in the gap? What does a prominent person mean? Who is that prominent person?
Yeah.
So I think that's probably where Sled is looking. You know, Buster's in a real tough spot right now. He's a victim, clearly of the murders and clearly of his father's criminal conduct that he's done for 12 years. He lost a mother and a brother. Now he's lost a father. He's been ridiculed because of the law school expulsion over an alleged plagiarism incident. He and his girlfriend, you know, are being subject to a lot of paparazzi and a lot of people following them, whether they're camera people, photographers, or journalists. They've been making a number of police reports, but you know, the Murdaugh cachet, the cachet of the Murdaugh name is gone.
Yeah.
The Citadel has fallen. So I guess the family wanted Alex to be not guilty of murder of Maggie and Paul, because they probably could rationalize, well, that doesn't fall on us. If he's innocent, that's great, or not guilty. You know, him stealing from clients, that has nothing to do with us. And him being a drug addict or a drug taker, drug user, that's not us. But the murders taint the family name forever. You know, can you imagine being in a restaurant and you hear table for four for Murdaugh? You turn your head, right?
Yeah.
You got to turn your head.
Yep.
Same if you heard, you know, table for four for Hitler. You turn your head.
Sure, sure.
So Buster, I don't see coming out on top. I don't see Randy Murdaugh staying with his law firm. I think the name has such negative connotation and negative juju to it that you can't be associated with it. Buster's going to have to change his name. He's going to have to change his name to Fred Reynolds, dye his hair black, and move to Montana. I just don't see a way forward for that family, especially because there's so much more to come. You know, you described it as an onion. I described it as venereal disease. It's the gift that keeps on giving. You know, we got all these criminal trials that are coming up for fraud. They're going to schedule immediately the Satterfield case. You heard Judge Newman in the sentencing say that he's presiding over 99 of these charges.
Yeah.
And Creighton Waters came right out and told me, we're going to keep our foot on the throat of Alex Murdaugh and his lawyers. And they're going to schedule a Satterfield case, because if they convict him of three of those financial crime cases, it's life without parole, which is a great backstop to the murder case if somehow it's overturned on appeal, which we'll talk about, which I don't think it will be.
No.
And I say that because I debated Alan Dershowitz about this about a week ago and learned some things in the debate why it won't be overturned. But, you know, you have those criminal cases. You got Corey Fleming. His criminal trial's got to be scheduled. You have the Stephen Smith investigation. You have the sentencing of Russell Lafitte, the banker, who was convicted in February in federal court of a whole bunch of mail fraud, wire fraud, and all that. And Judge Gergel just last week denied his motion for a new trial without a hearing in a 42-page order. So you have so many different things. Plus, you have the federal government sitting there waiting as a backstop for the state on Alex. So you should have asked yourself, well, why hasn't the federal government charged Alex with bank fraud, wire fraud, conspiracy, money laundering, and income tax evasion? Remember?
Oh yeah.
He didn't declare $8 million worth of income that he stole. So the answer is because if they would have charged him, Harpootlian would have marched him down to the federal court the next day and pled him straight up so that he could have done his time in a federal prison where it's minimum security if you commit financial crimes.
Okay.
But getting him convicted of the murders and these blue collar crimes, he has to do his time in the big house with a lot of bad people.
Sure.
And so the federal government's going to sit back and wait to see how it all shakes out. Obviously, the murder charge was a good start and conviction, but they're going to see if he's convicted of these financial crimes. And if there's somehow that Harputlian or Griffin can navigate the gauntlet to get the murder charge reversed and get modest sentences for the financial crimes, then they'll bring their charges. But there's never going to be a modest sentence for Alex Murdaugh. It's not going to happen. Remember, I argued his bond hearing in the first financial crime charge, and I prevailed on Judge Newman to have him denied bond for a financial crime. First time in our state's history that somebody was denied bond for a financial crime. And then he went and made a motion to modify it. And the Supreme Court remanded it back to Judge Lee, and she gave him a $7 million bond with no 10%. And obviously he couldn't raise the $7 million and still can't. But if there was a hung jury on that murder trial or a not guilty verdict, then they would have gone back to court. And I'm sure the judge, a judge would have lowered his bond, and he could have possibly gotten out on bond pending all these trials coming up.
Yeah.
But now he has no chance, no chance. Probably, you know, I'm going to be 61. You're a lot younger than me. He's got no chance to see the light of day ever again.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
So much more I want to talk about with Eric Vlad, and we're going to in our next segment, including talking about the case of Stephen Smith and where Eric thinks that may go in the future, now that it's been reopened since the deaths of Maggie and Paul. Some insight from the attorney for the family of Gloria Satterfield. That is coming up in just a moment here on the feed. Press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of it. My name is Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
Ahora en McDonald's, te puedes llevar un $5 McChicken Meal Deal o un $6 McDouble Meal Deal. Así, hay algo para todos. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu Meal Deal. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.